You have to answer for this nerd podcast mafia, Dave. You fingered her podcast to be associated with Dork of All Trades and Geek Yogurt?
Ben, you got it all wrong.
Ah, that little farce you played with old Johnny. You think that'll fool the beard?
It's innocent. I swear on our podcast.
Sit down.
Please, the Nerd Podcast Mafia. They're good people. A respectable group of like-minded podcasts that support and promote each other. I listen to So Wizard and Fans on Patrol all the time. And there are a number of other great podcasts in the mix. Just check them out at nerdpodcastmafia.com for yourself.
You make me an offer I cannot refuse.
Thank you. Now leave the cape. Take a cannoli.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm yours, Dave.
And John.
You're losing your voice already?
Sorry, I can't hear you past this mound of Ricola.
You sound like someone who spent a weekend at a comic book convention.
Yes, and, someone who spent a week at a comic book convention and forgot to bring the hand sanitizer.
Oh, that's the worst.
Ricola's so good. Wait, let me take a swig of Listerine here. it's delicious.
Your Listerine says blackberry brandy on it.
Hey, tomato, alcohol. It's the same difference.
So that's right, boys and girls. We attended the Great Philadelphia Comic Con this past weekend. And by we, I mean I went there on Saturday and John went all 3 days.
I'm making up for lost time.
Yes, and looking for lost children. I know, it's a busy life.
You gotta have something to sell on the black market.
So, this is the third year in a row for the convention, the third year that we have gone as press. And I gotta say, you know, it's still one of my favorite conventions. They were a little bigger this year.
But they're still, for all intents and purposes, by all accounts, this one is still for the comic book fans. It hasn't turned into a three-ring circus like some sorcery type named convention has supposedly become.
Yes. No. Yeah, that's the thing. We talked to a lot of creators while we were there, and they all basically said the same kinds of things. That certain conventions, which shall remain nameless, have become a big circus. The other conventions, yes, like there were jugglers apparently at one not too long ago. Then other conventions have become big media events, like San Diego and even New York to a point.
where
this is, you know, still a good comic book convention.
To say that there are entire swaths of tables and which are the only thing you can find there are comic books, actual comic books.
Yes. I mean,
and all that other, I mean, just about anything you're looking for, they've got it there.
Right. I mean, you walk in and you're walking into Artist Alley, where a lot of other conventions, you know, you walk in and the celebrities are right there, or the vendor floor, or whatever. Like this, you walk in and boom, you're hit with Tommy Castillo was right as you walked in the front. And
Peter David.
Yeah, and Peter David, right as you walked in, was off to your right. And
Bob Camp.
Yes, Bob Camp. Like was staring
literally
at you.
Right in front of the door. Yeah, him and Missy. Hi, Missy, if she ever listens. You know, his girlfriend just staring at you, kind of creepily, actually. But we love you, Missy. We love you.
Yes.
You too.
Yeah, and it was great. So there's a handful of people that I've always wanted to get on this show. We got to talk to one of them, which is coming up soon, and we did talk to another one, who is Mike Zeck. For those who are unfamiliar, he was an artist that worked for Marvel for many years. Most notably, he designed Spider-Man's black costume during the Secret Wars crossover. And we talked to him for a good bit, but he didn't want to be recorded. So, you know,
we'll get him.
We'll get him eventually. We'll guilt him into it.
Of all entire bunches of Ricola here, I've got the kind of thing I think that he was using too. It was like the BlackBerry or whatever. So,
yes, because
they have to take care of him.
That like John and him, boys and girls, bonded over Ricola. It was amazing. It was beautiful to watch.
I don't know why.
But we did.
It was cool. Some of the things we talked about with him. It was just
we talked a little bit about the black costume. Of course, no one knew that it was going to become Venom eventually. But that was cool. And then we cornered one of my all-time favorite writers and convinced him to talk to us. I don't know how we did it. What did you offer him, John, that you didn't tell me?
Who are you talking to, Pete? You're talking about Peter David?
Yes.
that's right. I know exactly what we offered him. We bought some of his daughter's Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, that's right.
Literally.
Yes, he was selling Girl Scout cookies. And John...
They were the good ones, too. The gluten-free with the butterscotch in them. Oh, It was totally worth it.
No, I'm sorry. Gluten-free and good do not go in the same sentence.
Hey, they're Girl Scout cookies. There is bad.
So, yes, the one and only Peter David, for those who aren't familiar with him, he not only
If you're not familiar with him, you are familiar with him. You just don't realize it because yes. You have read, watched, or heard about something that he has done. There is no way you haven't. He's that prolific.
He worked on many comics, including Young Justice, Amazing Spider-Man. He wrote the other storyline in Amazing Spider-Man. I know not everyone liked it, but what else did he work on? Star Trek novelizations, like you name it. He's worked on it. And
he's got an Eisner Award in 1992, Wizard Fan Award in 1993, not talking about Wizards of the Coast, we're talking about something else, Hackster Award in 1996, a Julie Award in 2007, a GLAAD Media Award in 2011.
And yes, and I actually first became familiar with him back in 1985. I'm just looking this up real quick. Considered one of the greatest Spider-Man stories. It's in a collection of the greatest Spider-Man stories that Wizard put out not too long ago. It was the death of Jean DeWolf. So there was a Spider-Man Daredevil crossover in it. It's a mystery, which is a little different for Spider-Man, but yeah, I just, you know, again, I'm a huge fan. John's a fan. John's a fan of cookies. So.
So it all works out. Yes.
So it all works out. So without, you know, talking about his greatness anymore, here he is, Peter David. He
jumps out of a closet, confronts an assassin, and says, "What's up, Drac?" My editor swore to me that Joe Straczynski would not let us do that line. And I said, "Why not? I didn't call him the Drac. Joe did. I didn't establish that Garibaldi loves Warner Brothers cartoons. Joe did. All I'm doing is taking the two things to their logical conclusion." And sure enough, Joe had no issue with it at all. I'm sure they sat there going, "Damn it, I wish I thought of that."
This, I mean, like, this is all, like, if you ever watch, like, the whole series, this ties it so together. And it was only available, the hardcover Sci-Fi Book Club.
Yep, I remember.
And mine got, like, destroyed in a flood, And I like tried for like try and find this on like Amazon or eBay. It was like it was forever.
Where'd you finally find it?
Amazon.
Oh, okay, good.
Amazon. I paid $50 for it, but
wow, okay.
I like it all in one
excellent.
Thing.
Right. Can't nice. Blame you. Not to mention the fact that they wound up underprinting the third book. The third book alone
I've got like the soft covers.
The third book of the series, that alone goes for $50-$60 on eBay.
It was like
so was $50 for the whole thing is great.
Yeah, I mean like it took me forever. It took me 7 or 8 years to get this book.
Jesus.
And I got it originally from Sci-Fi Book Club, but
oh, okay.
You know, and these books are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
These are awesome.
I appreciate it.
And
you should have Marina sign those too.
I was thinking about it.
And have Bruce and Mira sign the.
I'm thinking about that too. Yeah.
Well, they're on the cover for Christ's sake.
I know. I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
But awesome okay. writer.
Hi there. Okay, guys, I'm about to do an interview, so I can't talk, but I can sign stuff silently. Okay? Oh, thank you very much. Okay.
Wow, he's got a lot to sign, too.
Yeah. Oh, no.
The Dark Tower.
No, it's four books.
Ladies and gentlemen, happening in 15 minutes in panel room one.
This day suddenly got a lot longer.
Yep. Rogue One from A New Hope. This panel features David Ankrum, Alan Harris, Angus McGinnis, and John Norton. Again,
four
Star Wars, A New Hope to Rogue One. Happening 15 minutes in panel room one.
Excellent. Okay, so let's go.
You want me to? Okay. All right, everyone. Now we are here with the one and only Peter David. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, this is your first year at the Philadelphia Comic Con.
Yes, it is.
What do you think of the con so far?
A little bit underattended.
Okay.
I'm also not thrilled that various people were not met at the airport. J.K. Woodward had to take an Uber over here. Several people have, so I'm not, so far I would like to see more fans here. But the fans who are showing up are effusive and generous and supportive. So, in terms of the convention itself, I'm having a great time.
I mean, yeah, this is actually, we've been coming since I started. This is the third year, and it's grown actually a lot since the first year. So, yeah, we hope to keep seeing it grow.
Me too.
So a question that we usually like to ask people is writing something you've always wanted to do?
Yes. I mean, people say to me, I want to become a writer. How do I come up with ideas?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand that it doesn't work that way. You become a writer because the ideas that occur to you compel you to go and write them down and distribute them to as many people as you can, ideally with your name on the front of it in as large letters as you can. You know, it's an inner compulsion. The ideas come to you and you just have to write them down.
Right. So you've written comic books, novelizations, done books based on popular TV series, plus your own work.
Yes.
Do you have a preferred medium that you write in, and do you prefer writing your own stuff or working with existing characters?
Well, in terms of pure storytelling, I probably enjoy novels the most because it's just me.
Right.
There's me, there's the words, and there's the reader. It doesn't have to be filtered through actors or artists or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my story. On the other hand, when you do collaborate with artists and actors and directors and that kind of thing, you can wind up, getting your material tremendously improved in ways that you could not have conceived of originally.
Cool. I guess that is true. I never thought about that because, if there's a certain character that has to be written a certain way and you haven't thought of the character that way before, it doesn't... Oh.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
It does cause you to have to go outside of your comfort zone.
Yes.
Okay. So what's your favorite thing that you've ever written?
I don't have a single favorite thing. Okay. It's like asking what's my single favorite child. You know,
you're not the first person to have said that to us.
What?
You're not the first.
Yes. Well, it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, there are some things that turned out better than I think other things have turned out. But ultimately, you know, I love all the work that I put into everything that I do.
Cool. And do you ever see yourself slowing down at all?
When I'm dead. aside from that, no, I'm going to keep working.
Cool. Do you have anything coming out you want people to keep an eye out for?
Well, for Marvel Comics, I have a new book called Ben Reilly's Scarlet Spider that will be coming out at the end of April. I'm also working on the third book in the Hidden Earth trilogy. As a matter of fact, it's on my computer right now. I'm going to, when nobody's around, I just sit here and work on that.
Cool.
Wolf to panel room one. Wolf to panel room one.
And they've got you in the best seat. You're right by the speaker for all the announcements.
Yeah, I'm thrilled about that. I'm just thrilled they're not playing music over it.
So what's a... one of the questions we usually like to wrap up on is how do you measure success?
Well, I mean, you know, part of it is quite simply coming to places like this and having
Josh Hawks to panel room one. Josh Hawks to panel room one. Wolf to panel room one.
Well, in terms of measuring success, I do it, you know, partly through places like this. Going to conventions and having people come up to me and tell me they like my work and buying my stuff and throwing money at me. You know, it's really probably the easiest and best way to measure it. Because if you go to a convention and nobody comes up to the table, then that's kind of a hint that maybe you should be in another profession.
That is a perfect answer.
Okay, thank you.
And for those who don't know, where's a good place to follow you online?
Ladies and gentlemen, happening very shortly in panel room one, Star Wars, A New Hope to Rogue One. Happening very shortly, panel room one, 11 o'clock.
There's a lot of ambiance today.
No kidding. They can follow me on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. They can follow me on Twitter. And I have a website, peterdavid.net.
Cool. Excellent. All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
It's a shame they put him right by that speaker.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, on the bright side, we got a lot of ambiance while we were there.
Yes. John kept calling the overhead announcements ambiance.
Yes. It's like NPR, you know, you record it where it lies, to mix metaphors. He's an easy guy to talk to. He's really nice. The only thing is that he wouldn't let us see what was on his laptop, which is something he was, you know, quote unquote, working on that wasn't ready for the light of day yet.
No, no. I mean, I even tried walking away with the laptop and he tackled me and it became a whole thing. But, you know, next year.
You know, you'll never wash the shirt that he sweated on. You know, that's okay.
Yes, of course. I got it framed.
Yeah. But no, seriously, if you ever see him at a convention, he loves the fans. As you heard in the intro to the recording, he was talking with some of the fans about some of the work, some of the harder stuff that he's put out that isn't really available anymore, is out of print, how they were managed to get their hands on it. And, you know, he loves the fans. He just does.
And the fans love him.
Yep.
Anyway, so moving on from that, we actually then end up talking to a former guest who's been on the show twice before. She was part of our Women in Comics special we did last year, and then we caught up with her at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con last year and talked to her again for another few minutes.
Snarfs. I will never, ever be able to think of this woman again without thinking snarfs. I'm not talking Thundercat snarfs. I'm talking la 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 snarfs.
Yes, she did a lot of great artwork, which were 80s mashups.
Really bad 80s mashups.
Smurfs, like, and Snarf.
Moltron.
Yes. Moltron.
Oh, my God.
An octopus that was Optimus Prime, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Optimus Prime.
Yeah. And, of course, we're talking about Dawn Griffin. Those who are
familiar with her work. She writes a series of books called Abby's Adventures. They're you know, geared towards kids. She's worked on the Rise comic book series, which is an anti-bullying comic book series. And she's just, you know, really nice person, all around great writer and artist. And again, without too much build up, because, you know, this episode might be running a little long.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dawn Griffin.
We're good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're now here with one of our favorite repeat guests, Dawn Griffin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. So, this is your second year here at the Great Philadelphia Comic
Con? Third year. I've been here since they started. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. And what do you think of the con this year?
It seems to have grown a little bit. It's pretty much, it's similar to last year in terms of size, but I feel like it's grown a little bit, and I saw far more crowds line up outside than I remember last year. So that's all good signs. You know, it's a good sign that people are spending money already on Saturday morning. That's usually a good sign. So, hopeful.
Yes. And you, I mean, so people will know you specialize in children's books.
Sure.
So does it, you see a lot more kids that seem interested in your stuff? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I mean, there's a lot more families coming and a lot more kids, girls buying my kids' books, Abby's Adventures, as well as families buying Zorf, Bert, and Fred, which is really an all-ages comic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mainly so far kids have been buying it. But usually it's like half and half. I've got adults buying and kids buying it. But, you know, cool. It's good. I see a lot of adults reading with their kids. So dads and sons, moms and daughters reading together. So that's good.
And so when we're going through some of your prints here, you have the 80s rejected cartoons. Which horrified John, the Snurfs.
Hey, and there's oh my God, it's a
Inspector Gadget.
Now the little guy from Gremlins.
Yeah, Gremlins.
That's his breed or whatever. Okay. But so Gizmo is
Gizmo,
his name. So it's Inspector Gizmo. Gizmo. So Gadget, exactly, yeah. So the puns and plays on words are really big right now.
Octopus Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
See, so
Voltron instead of Voltron.
Sorry, the Snarfs, the Smurf Snarfs are the worst. They're that's all you need to hear.
And they're all marching in line. I think it's just the army of them. If I just drew one, maybe he wouldn't be nearly as threatening to you.
So, where do you think your sense of humor for this kind of stuff comes from?
I think it's just me being goofy, and some of it's just seeing what works online first,
right.
People like to figure out, they see a drawing, they like to figure out what the puzzle is behind it sometimes.
Right, right.
So instead of just drawing, like, I did these rejected 80s cartoons for something called Inktober, which is in October, and a lot of artists will post one thing day, a month, in the month of October, obviously.
Right.
And so I decided last year, 2 years ago, to just do all the 80s things, like being an 80s kid was the theme.
Right.
So this year I pushed it and I said, oh, let's do rejected 80s cartoons. So instead of Care Bears, it's Care Pears. Yeah, that would flop. So
I see a Moltron too.
Yes, Moltron instead of Voltron for sure. Teenage Mutant Ninja Sloths. You know, that's not gonna do very well. It's gonna be a pretty boring show. So I mean, puns, people love them. I mean, they will it's great at a show too, because people want to stop at my table and figure them all out. And while they're there, they're drawing more attention. They're looking at my other work.
They're
buying original art. You know, so it's a good icebreaker. And
yes,
we can
definitely
kind of all reminisce about the 80s. This is great.
Well, not all of us. Some of us are 70s. But anyway.
I have to say, it's impressive how many kids know the 80s. I mean, I guess it's because a lot of people who grew up in the 80s are not raising kids, so they raise them on the stuff they remember. Well, but a lot of 80s stuff has come back.
Right, as I'm saying, a lot of 80s properties have come back big time, you know, in the last decade or so, because, you know, comic book movies made it real big. Who knew?
Right. So now it's like,
other
let's
than
bring
the millions
back
of comic
Strawberry
book
Shortcake,
fans.
And let's
yes,
bring
exactly.
back Voltron, and let's
oh,
bring
yeah,
back,
Voltron's
yeah.
back. Oh, my, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's basically all the people that grew up in the 80s
mm-hmm.
are now in positions in power, you know, in animation and movies. And what do they want to see? They want to see Power Rangers, but a gritty reboot. You know?
Exactly.
We're going to get
we'll get Voltron, but a gritty reboot, you know?
Right?
Or, we already got a Netflix series. So.
But I don't think we've seen that in other times in history. Like in the 80s, we didn't have a lot of reboots of stuff from the 60s.
A different time. It was a different time.
But
I mean,
again,
it's true. Why is it just that? Will the 90s start to reboot soon? You know, like, yeah. Is that going to be a new thing?
But I also kind of think, and I think it's true. I mean,
Full House, actually. I just thought of that. Yeah, Full House came back. So, yeah, I think we will start to see some of the, like, cheesy 90s
stuff. But I think it's true, and I think all of us, the three of us can agree with this, that in today's world, a lot of older people, we have what they call an extended adolescence. You know? We're able to hold on to it's. It's not frowned upon for us to hold on to the things that we enjoy anymore.
Peter Pan syndrome, I've seen it called.
It's a nice way of saying we don't grow up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
we have our collections of stuff still at home, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, I am the wife, not the husband. But the wife doesn't make the husband kick his stuff out, you know. So
exactly.
My husband let me keep my Thundercats collection.
Cool. So, you have any new books this year? So people take a look, keep an eye out for, or
the last Surf Bright and Fried album has come out.
Okay.
And so that's probably my newest book. And I'm working on as I can because I have a lot of freelance going on right now. So I'm working on another graphic novel that will eventually come out, and I'll probably be posting about it on Patreon. Is probably what I'm wanting to do once I start getting some of the pages done, some of the character art done, and scripting it, and all that type of stuff. I'll be posting about it on Patreon. So if people want to follow it, they can pay a little bit to be able to see the inner workings of how I'm putting this all together before I put it out and as a book. I hopefully will be trying to get it picked up by a publisher.
Cool.
And that'll be my first attempt in a while to not. I have a publisher of my kids' book series, but with Zorf, Britt, and Fred, it's totally self-published. So this will be my first time going back into publishing and hopefully find a publisher that likes kids' work or young adults. That's kind of what it's in that genre.
So for our listeners who'd be interested in supporting that, what is your Patreon?
I have an account. I don't have it set up yet, though.
Oh, okay,
so this would only be right now. It'd be kind of a crime to ask people to give me money, and I'm not gonna have anything to show them yet.
Right.
So once I do, you'd probably be able to search for Dawn Griffin under Patreon. You'd find me. So Dawn Griffin Studios.
Okay, and your website again, so people know.
DawnGriffinStudios.com. Yes. And if you want to read my old comics, Zorf, Bert, and Fred, it's ZFComics.com.
Cool. All right, and I'm gonna ask you the question that. You've already answered this, but we always like to wrap up with this. Because it might have changed. How do you measure success?
Oh, this is a very good question. And we talk about this a lot on my own podcast from the Webcomic Alliance. We talk about success and how it's different between all of us, you know?
Right.
I think it varies, like year to year, whatever you might want to do and what you're striving for. Once you feel like you hit one plateau, then you're always looking for another. So it's a movable thing, depending on where you are.
Definitely.
I think that's the one thing that I had to learn coming out of college, or going into college, really, was I thought that I would just get to a point, like, okay, I reached success, now I can, like, do the victory dance and call it a day. but it's never that. Whether it's how you're drawing and if you're happy with how your art, what your art is like, or whether it's, okay, I landed a book with a publisher, I'm done, mic drop, it's over.
Right.
It never is that. So it's always an immovable thing. So for me right now, my next goal is getting a book picked up by a major publisher that would promote young adult graphic novels, which is a big booming industry right now. So even Scholastic has its own graphic novel section.
Right.
So I mean, I'm hoping to find a space in there and get in, and that will be success. But once I get there, then I'll be what's next. So success, finding success is always what's next. Is how I could say.
No, that's cool. I mean, and it's funny because
one moment, God is speaking.
Like we told Peter David, we have a lot of ambiance today.
God is speaking, but I can't understand him.
Yes. No, it's funny because that idea of hitting plateaus and finishing things, I think we're taught that in school.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're done. But that's not how life works.
No.
Yeah, so it's tough to get past that once you get out of school. But
it was definitely a huge lesson. And I remember the moment that my, I might have talked about this in the other podcast, but my illustration professor, who we had just a couple of them in my school, so right. I would just keep taking the same classes over and over with this guy. I mean, it was always new projects, but I just remember going in, and I always wanted to impress him. I always wanted him to look at my work and say, I have nothing critical to say about this.
Right.
Like, this is perfect. And I got that. One time, I got that. And he went in as, I really don't have anything to say about this piece. I love it. It's wonderful.
And did you quit right then and there?
I wished I had a mic so I could drop it in the middle of my classroom. Like, I wish, because I was just like, yes, success. I'm at the pinnacle, you know?
Right, right.
And so he said, like, this is really great. And then he walked up to my desk, and he slammed his hands. I guess he saw it in my face. Like, I'm, like, smug. Like, yeah, that's right. I did it. Yeah. And he comes up. He slams his hand on my desk.
Right.
And looks me in the face. He's like, don't get comfortable. And I was just like,
yep,
damn. you know. So, and he just said, I want you to do me something totally new in a new style next time. Just push yourself.
Right.
Nice. And that, like, shattered everything in that moment, because I was like, I wanted to celebrate. You know, like, but... But that kind of was my biggest lesson, was that artists don't get comfortable.
Right.
As an artist. I mean, really, as anybody, you know, living in reality, you can't get totally
exactly.
comfortable. You have to always look for what's next and how to improve, better yourself as a person, as an artist, as a professional. So, yeah, that was something that always stuck with me, you know, from this illustration professor. I was totally not expecting it.
Well, with that, I think you can drop the mic. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. And John, she, really, you loved her art.
I do. I should have bought something, but I'm sure we're going to see her again. I got to get the Snarfs thing. I just, every time I think of that, it almost makes my life worth it. I'm telling you.
Oh. Wow, that was a loaded statement. I mean.
Moving on.
All right, so as I initially said when we started this episode, that I went on Saturday, right? And I was there when we talked to Peter, David, and Dawn. But our fearless man on the street, our roving reporter, if you will, our favorite son, John O'Grady, was there all 3 days.
You really have a skewed sense of the world, don't you?
It's all for you, John. It's all for you. And so... He talked to Blind Prophet on Sunday.
A.K.A. Joseph Sillow Jr., who wrote a comic called Blind Prophet.
Oh, sorry.
And
I was picturing a blind guy who was telling you what was going to happen in your future.
Well, actually, you're not quite far off, because he was in costume this year, unlike last year. And he was in a kind of a gladiator angel costume with sword.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So, but it's an interesting story about a kid who's born blind but can actually see angels and demons as they're fighting amongst us. And I won't give anything more away. That's up to the author himself. We did interview him last year, problem being that last year we were under-equipped. AKA we were not serious yet. This year we're serious. So we upgraded from the, you know, 14 or what, man, it was only like $7, $7 microphone that you plugged into your phone to our nice Zoom 6 $200 recorder that handles up to 4 mics and all that. Anyway, point being, we finally got an interview that you could hear him in.
Yes.
So here we are. It's Infernuity Publishing, and his name is Joseph Sillow, and here is Blind Prophet.
All right. This is here we go. This is John O'Grady and Cipro Speak. We are here talking with Blind Prophet and Joseph Sillow Jr., who is the creator. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
So we were here last year, and our microphone broke during the interview, so it didn't go very well. The audio was pretty bad. So we're here again talking to you. This year, you're back at the Philadelphia Comic-Con with a new book, I guess, or at least you've got a whole compilation now.
That's right. So we put the first 4 episodes into a single volume. We're calling it Blind Prophet Part 1. There'll be a total of 7 episodes to complete the whole storyline, but this gives you a more economical way to buy it, because we were able to sell this for just $10 at the Comic-Con, which is a special price. But if you bought the comic books, it's almost $20 the list price for them. So.
Okay. So let's go over again what exactly the comic book is about, if you want to give like a quick synopsis of what you've written.
Okay, so Blind Prophet is a story about a boy. He's born blind and autistic, and they do an operation to stimulate his vision, and he starts seeing demons and angels in the spiritual realm. So this power develops to a point where he can understand how demons are tempting people, and that way, that's kind of an unexpected power that he has, to understand the villain's motivations before they even become a villain, to try to disrupt the plots of the demons are trying to orchestrate.
Very good. One of the questions we normally ask individual creators is about the process of how they got from, I want to make up a comic book, to sitting here in a convention with a table and actual comics on the table. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, I kind of backed into that process. So I started out thinking of this as a comic book kind of character, but thinking of it more as a movie. And I wrote it as a screenplay originally. And then because I didn't think Hollywood would be very honest to my vision, I wanted to get the story out in a consumable form. So I said, well, it's kind of a comic book story anyway, so let me make it into a graphic novel. And then it was taking so long to get the graphic novel completed that I said, let's do it as episodes and make it into a comic book series. So that's how we got there. And then in order to market it, as part of the idea was, I don't really know what I'm doing with marketing stuff, so let me start marketing each episode of the comic book, and that'll give me some experience getting out and talking about the actual story.
And you're the writer, right?
That's right. I'm the writer and the creator. I laid out the panels for the artist, and then the artist took it from there and rearranged things a little bit and made it better, because I don't have exactly the best visual eye. I can't draw anything. So
you're not the only one, trust me. What was it like trying to find an artist that could bring this your vision to life?
Yeah, it was an interesting kind of process. I used an online service where you post your project and you have artists bid on it. And I was looking for somebody who was not necessarily completely established, but who had a lot of talent and was excited about the project. And that's where I found Gabriel Santiago. So he's been the artist and he's been doing all the artwork. So he does the penciling and the coloring and everything else. So.
It's very distinctive art, too. I mean, it looks like colored in pencil, but it's very stylistic, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of the things I didn't mind, was that I want it to be enough like a comic book that people aren't, like, turning away saying, that's not a comic book, but I didn't mind having a distinctive kind of different style. So it is a little bit, you know, it's not a Marvel-style comic book, but it's a very good style. A lot of people comment on that they like the style and the color. And
yeah, a lot of the pages, I haven't looked through the book before, they look more like paintings than they do, you know, comics. The lines aren't defined, completely defined, and it's not like a black outline. It's a lot of smudging and a lot of interpretation.
Yeah, so that's it kind of is more of an artistic style than a traditional comic book style. And that was done deliberately. So, you know, we thought it would meet better the kind of, you know, there's a lot of religious themes with the angels and the demons, and that's kind of a traditional kind of artwork that is, you know, artists have been drawing angels for a long time, and there's kind of a style around doing that.
Now, did you, what are the comic books you read? I mean, did you read comic books before this, or did you come up with this idea and think, hey, comic books, that's a thing, and start going on it?
Yeah, well, I was one of those kids who got in trouble for reading comic books, so I stopped reading them when my parents told me not to read them anymore. I had trouble starting out reading, and so they didn't want me wasting my time reading things that were like comic books. So I had enough struggles in school with my reading classes. And I really started enjoying comic book stories when I started seeing them in the movies, and that's kind of why I started writing it as a movie, because it was kind of more natural for me to think in terms of movies, because I watch a lot of movies and read less comic books. But I love the big, wild stories that are in comic books.
Does that mean that yours is going to have a couple of really wild stories coming up?
Oh, yeah. So the story builds. It starts out with more of a traditional kind of a drama, not a comic book drama. And I kind of resisted that temptation to make it something really big right in the first episode. So it's one of these stories that builds and builds and builds to a big climax, and then it resolves. A very traditional kind of an arc in the story. So people reading the first episode might be surprised where the story ends up by the fourth episode. That's
cool. What other comic books do you like? I mean, I have to admit, this is the second. It's religious themes, but not, you know, overly religious. It's not specifically religious, but it is. This is the second book that I've seen here that has religious overtones, and I think you said that some people were coming by, they didn't like that idea, or has that been a problem?
No, it hasn't really been a problem. I mean, if people don't like it because of the religious content, they just kind of walk along and don't, you know, it's not their thing, you know. But it's written more, I'm thinking more in terms of a content like The Exorcist, which had a lot of religious content in it. You know, the big hero in The Exorcist is the priest. It was The Exorcist. So but you're dealing with demons as well. So I actually had somebody review the book who was an agnostic. She admitted it and said, you know, it dives into religion, but it didn't bother me because, it, you know, there's a bigger kind of story involved that captivates people.
Yeah, like I said, this isn't like a chick track, if anybody knows what that is. But when I say overtones, I mean literal, just overtones, but the rest of it is, and I looked through the first couple of books, and they, you know, it's a really good storyline. How long did it take you to get from the idea to standing here, or standing here last year, I should say, because it's been another year since I've seen you last?
Yeah, so, well, the idea was in 2011 when I wrote it as a screenplay, but the idea to make it into a comic book was in 2014. And it's now 2017, so we've been, you know, working on developing the artwork and getting it printed and marketing it. So it's taken a while. We had a few surprises along the way, and we ironed out some of the problems, and it's coming along. So we've got a good four episodes that ends at a very, very good place. It's kind of a cliffhanger at the end of episode four, so we're trying to get people to really be dying to read episode 5.
And episode 5 is out, or is it not out yet?
No, it's not yet out, so we're still working on it. So, yeah.
When do you think, let's see, you've got four issues now, and you've got the compilation for issues 1 through 4?
Yes.
Okay. And when do you think you'll continue it? How much?
Yeah, that's one of the things. With my artist, I don't ever set a deadline. So he's been working on other projects as well, and so I'm looking to get something out by the end of the year anyway, to get maybe one or two episodes out. But we have to see, you know, how it fits into the schedule, and the more people are dying for the next episode, the faster he'll get to it and work on it. So
this is true. Okay. And part of the marketing you're talking about is you, as opposed to last year, this year you are a little bit more dressed up than you were before.
Yeah, so I tried something new at this. This is the first Comic-Con where I'm dressing as an angel, and I think it's actually working to help draw people in and bring a little bit of attention to the project. So it's all good. I'm doing my own cosplay. I don't have anybody else cosplaying my material yet, so.
Okay. Well, the way we like to end these interviews is to ask a question, and I remember I asked you this before. I don't remember what your answer was last year, and unfortunately, because of the mic, it probably didn't make it onto the show. So the question is, how do you measure success?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So if I could eventually promote this well enough and get enough of a following that we could actually make it into a movie the way it was originally intended, and have an audience that's big enough that they're demanding that you do it the way it was in the book, that would really be the ultimate success.
Okay, fair enough. I hope to see you again next year, and issue 5, and maybe a movie deal someday. That would be great. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
So did he attack you with the sword?
Only after my last comment, which is when we had to end the interview.
Oh, okay.
Very hard to battle somebody with a microphone when they've got a sword. It's kind of uneven.
Yeah, that's true.
Plus, microphone cords are expensive. You wouldn't want him to cut through. Actually, seriously, nice guy. If you see him, take a look at the comic. It's well worth it. Like I said, this time around, this year, the convention was lousy with independent creators, where not only were the stories good, but the artwork was incredible too on just about everything I've seen at this convention this year. It's really good.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, in fact, you know, speaking of being cool, being independent creators, a company that we have interacted with quite a few times, SourcePoint Press.
And I swear we interviewed them at New York Comic Con too. I'm sure I've got an interview with some of them there.
Maybe. But all I know for sure is that, I mean, we just recently had David C. Hayes on the show. We've had Gavin McGinnis on. You know, and they had a little booth last year, and this year they had a big booth in the middle, and it was like a circular thing. You walked around it, and there was a creator on each side with a big display, and they suckered us into talking to one of them. I mean,
more like Shanghai, you know.
Yes.
Maybe a threatened, cajoled, something like that.
Yes. No, actually, all the guys were really cool. And we did talk about setting other stuff up with them later down the road. But from this convention, we talked to Bob Saley, who is the writer behind Salvagers from SourcePoint Press. And he was a lot of fun to talk to, I think. What do you think? Did you like him?
I think they have the biggest card by far of all the people we talked to. This thing's worth at least your, you know, 6 or 7 of your normal little business cards. I'm telling you, I've got a little pocket in my backpack for all the cards we collect at these things. And I've got all these other cards in there, and then I have to stuff this thing in? I mean, geez.
Yes, but that way you don't forget him.
No, you don't, because, you know, this thing you could literally kill somebody with, and he just chucked it at me like a throwing star.
So you know what, Bob? We didn't ask you this in person, but maybe you can answer this after everyone listens to the interview. Are you compensating for something? Ooh. So anyway, without further ado, here is Bob Saley.
Hey everyone, we're now here with Bob Saley, or Saley Field.
Hey, I'll take it. They really like me.
The writer behind Salvagers from SourcePoint Press. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for stopping by and having me on.
So this is the third annual Great Philadelphia Comic Con. What do you think of the con this year?
I love it. I unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it last year. I was a little disappointed that I couldn't be here, but I definitely wasn't going to miss it this year. I heard amazing things from my friends Jimmy McKnight, who's doing the MC, along with Jason Clark, and obviously everybody here at SourcePoint Press had nothing but great things to say about it. So, and it's also in my backyard. I grew up in Levittown, Pennsylvania, I was able to come in with the kids, dump the kids off with grandma and grandpa, and have a little fun, you know, hotel with the wife, camp, you know, sleeping in until 8.
With no kids.
Exactly.
Oh, so you were So originally from Levittown, you still in the area?
No, I moved to Boston, Massachusetts. I've been living there for about 15 years now.
You don't sound like you're from Boston.
No, you know, I don't sound like I'm from Philadelphia either, I guess.
No, that's true, that's true. So is writing comics something you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, it has been. I would say probably, you know, my entire life I wanted to write or draw, actually draw comics, until I found out at a very early age that I couldn't draw for shit. Sorry if I'm not allowed to curse on there.
No, perfectly fine.
Yeah, I couldn't draw to save my life, so as much as I kept forcing it, I realized, I'm like, if I want to be a storyteller, I'm going to have to do it in a different way, and it's going to have to be writing. So, did the whole writing thing, just pursued that, went to college for writing, and, it's been paying off finally.
What's the drawing that, like, convinced you?
My drawing that convinced me that I was horrible? I was making my own superhero teams.
Okay.
And they looked, I was trying to draw them like, my favorite was X-Men. So I was drawing characters like Colossus, like Wolverine and Storm. You get to a point where you look at the artwork and you know it's bad. When your mom's telling you how good it is and you're kind of like, Mom, you're the worst critic ever because this sucks. And then you look at other people's art and you're like, that's what it should look like. I wasn't going to lie to myself.
So one of the things that we actually talk about on the show a lot when we talk to writers and artists is finding that artist or writer that you can have a relationship with and that you kind of have a trust with. Did you find it, once you wanted to get into this, you decided you wanted to write, did you have a hard time finding an artist you liked?
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't even having a hard time finding an artist I liked. It was having a hard time finding an artist. I started doing this in 2001, and Facebook really wasn't a thing where you could and go to a comic creators group where there's writers and inkers and artists like all collaborating together. So what I was doing was going on Craigslist. I was actually going, at the time, I was going on Craigslist for dating and for looking for artists.
Oh, wow.
So, there was no match.com. Like, you go in there, they had, if we want to get real, the casual encounters. And I was single. Hey, I was young. I was single. But also in there, you could find artists. But it never really panned out. I found an artist that he did some conceptual art for me, and it was just very slow moving. It would take a while to get nothing like today. Like now, I could talk to an artist now, and you could have something in days. So it was taking a long time, and also I didn't even really have a script written. I was just conceptualizing the idea of it.
Okay.
So what I wanted was to be able to look at the characters and be able to visualize them while I was writing it. So my first step was to get the characters drawn, to be like, that is who it is. And it was just tough. There was artists, I think as you're new in the industry, artists don't really want to spend the time on something where they don't trust if it's even going to pan out.
Right.
Now, I think people know when you've printed stuff and you have it out there and you're at conventions, artists now see that and they're like, oh, hell yeah. I know that what you're going to do is going to be seen by hundreds of people, so yes, I want to jump on that, no questions asked. So it was tough, and there was a point where I was like, I don't have an artist, I can't find an artist, and you just think, maybe it's time to give up. And I had a friend of mine, Wendy Lau, who, she knew I was trying to write a comic book. She went to a high school reunion, and she went to high school with George Acevedo, and she talked to him, and he was saying how he's looking to draw a comic. So she said perfect, and she put us together, and that's how Salvagers Volume 1 came to be.
Sounds like you were a artist, a visual storyteller trapped in a writer's body.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst kind, isn't it? there's nothing worse than that. You're trying to break out, and you just can't.
So how did you get hooked up with Source Point?
Through networking online and at conventions, I saw what they were doing, and I saw that it was a really professional outfit, and I knew Travis McIntyre really well, and I knew that he was the type of guy that wasn't going to bullshit you, and he was going to be straight with you, and I was excited for him to take a look at what I was doing, and to see if it was something that they would enjoy having, that they would want on their label. Because I knew that they did a lot of cons. They go to 50 cons a year.
Yep.
They put the books out in stores. And it's just a really, it's an up-and-coming professional publication. So I was really excited to be a part of Source Point Press. And I actually brought them, Shelter Division first. And then once we really got started talking about Shelter Division, I brought them Salvagers. And it probably wasn't up their alley as far as what they are normally putting out there.
Right.
But I think luckily enough, like, I already had a fan base built for it. So it's kind of plug and play. Like, they knew that bringing my fan base into Source Point Press would be a win-win for both of us.
So, real quick for the listeners at home, what's the elevator pitch for Salvagers?
Salvagers is blue-collar science fiction. Star Wars has their rebels, Star Trek has their explorers. Salvagers are just co-workers out there cleaning up a dangerous galaxy, trying not to get killed or kill each other in the process.
And they use giant monkey wrenches in the process?
We have a giant wrench, and you can't even imagine how many people have done that to it. Animals, all of them.
We're not going to describe what that
yeah.
is.
You can just imagine what an infantile maniac would do with a 7-foot wrench. And right now, everybody listening just got that visual.
Yes.
The concept is just that simple. How does that expand out into the whole series?
So they're out there salvaging a derelict ship or, you know, a space station that needs to be cleaned up by a corporation, and there's other pirates and militias and other people out there, pickers, that also want a piece of that, but these are the guys that are actually licensed to do it. So as valuable as they are, the ship's out there, people are going to do whatever they can to get a piece of it. And you're out in space, you know, if a ship blows up, most people won't even know it. So the pirates are out there, they'll attack you for a piece of those. You know, if that ship has missiles on it and photon torpedoes and planet poppers, they'll come out there and they'll be like, hey, we'll blow you up to get that. So the salvagers have to, you know, they need to be skilled and they need to know, like, how to handle themselves with the steel and, you know, defend themselves out there because it's a dangerous... It's a very low life expectancy job.
Ah, like working in a coal mine.
Like working in a coal mine.
Or the comics, you know.
Or the comic industry.
Well, that's just because these guys have no health insurance.
Yeah. And you just drink a lot of orange juice, take the vitamin C pills. You don't want to get that concrete.
Oh, don't tell me about concrete.
Don't tell me about concrete.
So. Wow, my mind just went blank. I had a question and it just jumped out. How many issues you got to have out now? And then what are your plans going for? Like, how far do you see it going?
I mean, honestly, I tell people all the time, like, this is my passion project. I love this series. I love the characters. I will keep doing this as long as I can. And when I came to Travis about this, he asked me the same question. He said, like, what's your plan for it? And when I started doing this, I made the script was 3 volumes long, which to introduce the characters and to introduce the series, I think is a good thing to keep it going and to make it that long. But each volume is in its own self a volume. So you can read The Abandoned Cargo and you can be done with it. And you can say, like, you know what, I liked it. I see that there's more to come, but you know what, I'm going to stop reading it. Or you can go on and read the whole thing. Or you can read Rec Raiders, and you can jump on, and you can get the little info that happened, you know, pre-Rec Raiders,
right.
And you can read Rec Raiders. The problem with Rec Raiders, though, is it's going to have Empire Strike Back type of ending. So you will not be able to read Rec Raiders and just say, all right, I'm done. You will need to keep reading. It would be like watching Empire Strike Back and saying, I'm not going to watch any more Star Wars.
Well, you know, it's funny, because when I was a kid, the first one that I saw in the theater was Empire. So, like, I had no idea that there was a movie before that. I didn't know what was going on. And, like, I didn't know there was a plan for a third one. So when it ended, I'm like, wow, that was a really sad ending for a movie.
Yeah.
So besides Craigslist, where can people find this?
Casual Encounters, right? So you can find Salvagers on sourcepointpress.com. They're selling it in print, volume 1 in print. If you want to get issues 1 and issues 2 of Rec Raiders, you can buy those at dirtyplanet.bigcartel.com. But you can also get it digitally on Drive-Thru Comics, and I believe it'll be on Comixology soon as well.
And where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Bob_Sally. You can find me on Instagram at Bob_Sally. You can also find Salvagers on Facebook, Salvager Series, Instagram, Salvager Series, and on Twitter, just Salvagers. And I'm also on Facebook, Bob Sally. You know, come talk to me, message me. I'm always willing to talk to other people who are looking to break into the industry. Because of how hard it was for me to do it, I look to give back to the people that are trying to break in, because I know, you know, it's not easy. And if you don't know what you're doing, you know, it could be even harder. So I always try to tell people, come talk to me. I'll answer any questions you have. I can point you in the right direction. And even, you know, if you're looking for an artist, I could probably hook you up with an artist. So I'm always looking to just give back in that way.
Yeah, this is kind of why when we do a lot of interviews with some of the independent people, we ask the questions about how the hell they got to there, because, like you said, it's an arduous journey. If you don't know your path, finding an artist, finding a writer, or finding a publisher, or doing it on yourself, incredibly hard.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of people probably drop out of doing it because it's so hard. And, you know, and it's one of the things where I feel like the people that are in it, there's a major respect for creators in this industry, because you know as a creator how hard it was and how easy it is to give up.
Right.
And there's times where you're just like, you know what, like, why am I even doing this anymore? Like, it's so hard. But then to see you break, it's almost like breaking the sound barrier. Once you get through it, you know, it's not easier.
Right.
But you're there and it's smoother. So to know that the people that are there on that side, knowing what they had to do to get there, you have a respect for them because they worked their ass off for it. So it's a fraternity of creators. So it's, I'm glad to be a part of it.
And that is a good answer to lead into a question we like to usually end on, which is, how do you measure success?
You know what? I measure success by looking at the mirror and seeing what I'm doing. I love seeing the success of others. I think that success in the indie comic book world is, if anybody's success in the indie comic book world is a success for us all. If there's an indie creator out there that gets a movie made from them, don't look at that as your failure. Look at that as all of our success. Because we are a community. Indie comics is a community, and we're all in it together. So one person's success is all of our success, because it's only going to shed light on the indie community. So again, I always tell people, if there's indie people out there that are doing well and they're doing successful, you know, applaud them, because they are doing, you know, they're making you look good. They're shining a light on what you're doing, which is, you know, that's what we want, I think, as an indie community, is we want those movies to be made. You know, we want, you know, Hollywood to let's, instead of remaking Terminator again, let's go find something new in the indie market. Instead of doing all these pre-sold franchises, let's do something new, and let's give the world something new. And don't be afraid to. I think Hollywood's so afraid to invest their money into something new because they're afraid that what if it doesn't work out? So what they'll do is they'll rather put out something that's been done over and over again, get that weekend, you know, money in, and then be like, hey, you know, we'll make another one next year. And
soon they're going to take Arnold Schwarzenegger's corpse, put it on a stick, and do another Terminator.
Exactly, you know, it's, you know what, I think that more people that get to know that there's all these amazing indie titles out there, eventually I think Hollywood is going to have to, with Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, with all them doing these series, pretty soon, you know, indie comics is going to be where they're going to find their material.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end it. And awesome. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Maybe not, John. I mean, he was a big burly guy, had a beard. He probably wasn't compensating for anything.
You know, the title of the series, Salvagers, is really apropos right now, because we're going to have to do a lot to salvage our relationship with him, right?
maybe. We'll see. So again, we had a lot of fun, I think, this year at the con. They're growing. Hopefully they keep growing, and maybe they'll overtake the
Three Ring Circus.
Yeah. The con that shall be not named.
Because of copyright, not because we don't want to say it.
Exactly. And because, you know, we want to go to that con too.
This is true.
So yeah, and this is, like, you know, here's the thing, boys and girls. John was there all 3 days. He's an interviewing machine. This is only part one. We're going to have two more parts coming out that are, with more interviews in them. So stay tuned. We promise they'll be good.
And yet, well, we don't promise that the interviews will be good, per se. I'm thinking, with a couple more years practice, I may be within, sight distance of being okay at this. But you go up to talk to these people, and some of them are really nice. Most of them are really nice and very, very easy to talk to. And that's what you should do when you go to these conventions. Don't just walk around and look at the comic books and the figurines, although the figurines were pretty cool too. Go and talk to the creators themselves, because a lot of them, even comic books that you're not sure of, like, say, Blind Prophet, when we talked to him, Joseph Sillo, about it, there was a lot of people that had walked up to him and said something about the fact that it had, some religious overtones. I'm telling you, religious overtones have nothing to do with the story. The storyline it wasn't a religious book. It's like, if you want to be honest, Jim Butcher and Harry Dresden has religious overtones, but Everybody loves those books. Same thing with these books. You have to try them, and you have to talk to the creators too, because they have a lot of cool things to tell you about.
This is true. I mean, don't ever pass up an opportunity for a conversation at a convention is, I think, the best way to put it.
Hey, but what you do, never pass up using the hand sanitizer too.
No, that is also true. So I think we'll put a pin in it there for this week. So until next time, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Are you strong enough to stop a stupid movie rumor?
Are you more powerful than a bad comic book event?
Are you able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have got absolutely nothing better to do?
Then join the conversation by connecting with us on Facebook, Twitter, Slack, and other social media platforms.
And help us get our capes from getting stuck in the door by becoming an official Patreon patron.
And if you just want more content from us, don't forget to check out our website, where we post way more than we can discuss here.
So what are you waiting for? When you join our fight, everyone wins.